If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Whew, my goodness me, what a weekend of playoff football. I think one of my favourite weekends of playoff football that I can remember. It had absolutely everything. Upset specials, one of the most crackers games you will ever see in any sport, let alone the NFL. Ruthless performances, superstars stepping up. We will get into it all with comedian and friend of the show, Tom Deacon, dropping by very, very soon. And then, if that's not enough, there is the small matter of the college championship taking place tonight, Monday night, in the States. Where else would it be? In Japan. It's in the States. It is a huge game. And our college expert, Ben Isaacs, is on hand to get you set for it. And then Ben will be back on Wednesday, me and I and Mike on the Deep Dive Show, to let you know how it all went down. LSU Clemson is the college game. Ben's coming up a little bit later on to preview that. But first up, it's all NFL and it's all Tom Deacon. Tom Deacon, as I live and breathe, here we are. Here you are with your beloved 49ers, one game away from the Super Bowl, my friend.
I cannot believe it. Nat, it's a delight, a pleasure, as always, to be in your company talking about how good those 49ers are and that they really are the real deal. And all Niners fans are coming out of the darkness that we've been in for years and now are able to celebrate. And it's just one more win against the Green Bay Packers, which we've already done this year. And we could be in the Super Bowl.
We've done them this year already. I love that. I love that. Football beats football talk. So many things to think about there. First of all, you were telling me earlier on where you're watching the game. And I love that. Definitely one of the most rock and roll places to be watching the game. Coming off stage at the Comedy Store on Saturday night, which is pretty cool.
Very, very cool.
Where people are watching games and all 49ers fans all around the world, you know, tuning in and where the strangest place that you've watched the game is. I was working last January on location doing something like a live sports event last January when some of the playoffs were on. So it was a case of when I finished my links on air, would be sneaking down to where my tablet was to be watching as much as I could before I had to do my next link or my next bit of live things. So that was probably the most left field I had. What about you? What's the craziest place or the most left field place you've watched a game?
Well, I mean, it has to be I'm going to say the Comedy Store because that happened for the Vikings Niners game this weekend. Just been, I was at the Comedy Store, haven't been there for a while, so the pressure's on. You've got to deliver. You get 20 minutes on stage, and
Saturday night as well is a frisky old gig. Isn't
oh
it?
Yeah, it's frisky. People have paid good money. You have to deliver. But my mind was slightly elsewhere for this game. So once I'd done the longest 20 minutes of my life, it felt like, went backstage. There's another fellow comic called Scott Capurro, who's fantastic. He's from San Francisco. He didn't know the game was on, but I quickly put the NFL jersey on of Joe Montana and started to watch the game. And then, to which point he didn't care too much about the game, but he was like, oh my god, I've worked with Joe Montana, but I didn't know who he was. So that really really made me giggle. Probably there, and I suppose a lot of fans who love our NFL will probably be at work at some point, and we just need to check on the score. So sometimes you get to watch it, sometimes it's just quick look on the mobile phone and find out the score. But that probably is the most fun one because we were winning as well.
Yeah, what a game for the 49ers. It went absolutely according to plan, didn't it? Because there was, I guess, an element of doubt with the way that the Vikings were. It was that double whammy of coming into the game as heavy underdogs, so kind of a free hit really for them, and the mojo that they had because they turned over the Saints. They'd done the Saints the week before. So were you a little bit concerned going into it, or did it play out as you expected?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous about those Vikings. They did such a good job against Drew Brees. However, it didn't stick with their game plan because the Niners' only weakness is occasionally, and I say this occasionally, Jimmy Garoppolo being asked to throw the football too much. So they just ran the football. That's what they did. They've never run the football in a postseason game as much as they did against the Vikings. They took an early lead and never look back. And what they did do as well up front defensively was stop Dalvin Cook. I mean, he had the worst numbers I think he's had all season. And at that point, when I realized that we were just going to run the football and our defense was so dominant getting sacks on Kirk Cousins, it was never in doubt. But going into that game, I thought, it's typically going to be the sixth seed in the NFC going to get a win against the Niners.
Yeah, it's interesting what Shanahan said afterwards about that. We had a goal going into the game. We thought the team that got over 30 runs would win it. We truly look at that as a team goal. We ended up getting 47 on offense. They got 49ers. I mean, look at the areas that you completely dominated. So total yardage on the ground, 186. That was more than the entire Vikings offense, right? Tevin Coleman, what a game. He had two scores and over 100 yards. Mostert, you mentioned as well, got in the mix. Time of possession always typically quite critical. 38-27. Plays 21-33 and holding the Vikings to just 2 of 12 on third down conversion. So all around, it was a really, really fluent performance. Richard Sherman stepping up as well, who we all love, right? I think all neutrals love because he is one of the larger-than-life characters in the NFL, still playing at an absolutely elite level and balling again against the Vikings. And after that critical pick, echoing, I think, what many of us were probably thinking after Kirk Cousins had reprised his, you like that line off the Vikings Saints win, Sherman just went straight down the barrel of the camera. I like that. loving it. Which, if it's not a GIF or a meme or both right now, it absolutely should be. So I'm going to try and find that. But terrific stuff from Sherman. And all in all, I think the only, I guess, question marks were, couple of shaky moments from Jimmy G. I mean, and you know, I like Jimmy G, but there are a couple of wavy throws in the mix, which kind of keeps your mind fresh as to he might roll one of those out against the Packers, but not too much to fault really, was there?
No, not at all. Jimmy G does exactly what he needs to do. And I know what you mean when you look at Jimmy G, and I know Niners fans are doing it as well. We're thinking there's an interception in him at any point, and he's been very consistent. Shaky start at the beginning of the season, ironed that out. And in this game, let's not forget, and I think give credit to the Vikings, the linebackers that they have were just trying to just second guess where he was going to try and generate something in that game, and they managed to get that pick off him. However, what I love about it is Kyle Shanahan. And every good head coach does it. Protect your quarterback. The Titans, and we're going to talk about very shortly, they game manage Tannehill. Don't ask too much of him. When Jimmy G does have to deliver, and he has done it in previous games, especially against the Seahawks in week 17, he can deliver. And that's the beauty of this team. And that's why they're so dangerous. And if they're not everybody's pick to win the Super Bowl this year, then what are you playing at?
Who would you rather be playing in? The Packers, the better matchup be than the Seahawks, do you think, in the championship game?
Part of me, we've beaten them twice this season. Let me correct that. Very close to beating them twice. You know, we failed in one, but who's counting that one? I would have loved to have defeated them twice a year, but I feel like this Green Bay Packers, it's going to be a more exciting game, and what a revival for Aaron Rodgers, the guy that the Niners could have picked up in the 2005 draft, but they went for Alex Smith instead. It's written for the neutrals, and I can't wait to see the Niners, hopefully, fingers crossed, beat the Packers again.
Do you think the 49ers are favorites to win the whole thing now?
I think overall, defensively, incredibly solid. We've got a great running game. You mentioned Tevin Coleman had a very, very strong game in this one, getting a touchdown or two. And Mostert as well, another fantastic running back who also plays special teams that then managed to get that turnover towards the end of the game for another field goal for the Niners. They're just rolling with Matt Breida as well and George Kittle. He wasn't asked to do too much in this game. And Kendrick Bourne, we've got, of course, Sanders as well. It's just stacked.
Kendrick Bourne is clutch, isn't it? Isn't it? What a player. I mean, you are absolutely stacked. And Shanahan clearly avoiding what some head coaches were suffering through a lot of this divisional weekend. The wrath of Twitter. We'll talk about Andy Reid. Poor Andy Reid. Poor Bill O'Brien, who ended up on, I think, the worst of it. But the first quarter of the remarkable game between the Texans and the Chiefs that we'll get into in a moment, Andy Reid was getting pelters on Twitter, but had the last laugh, I think. But Shanahan kept his powder dry there. Everybody loves Shanahan, and you can understand why. In terms of the danger of, or the pressure of, maybe is a better way of describing it, that a team that is expected to go all the way. We saw that with the Ravens firsthand. The pressure was clearly showing to many degrees. It was showing with the Chiefs as well, who were such heavy favorites in their game against the Texans, and it came good in the end. But the way that the first quarter went down for them, you've got to think that a lot of that was just to do with the self-consciousness of pressure that, you know, we are getting closer and closer and closer to the Super Bowl. And it's something not to be underestimated, isn't it, Tom? The importance of the Super Bowl for these guys who, look, in any sport, you want to reach the pinnacle if you're a pro, unless you're Jay Cutler, and then you're not really bothered. And in the NFL, there's something really mythical and quite spiritual about the Super Bowl. It's been, you know, from these guys have been playing football since they were 5-6 years old, and you hear them talk about it. Just getting to one, let alone winning one, is this this mystical end game. So when it is tantalizingly close, you can understand why the pressure really starts to mount in their heads.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it, like you say, it's not just of the NFL, but as we're talking about this, it comes down to the Super Bowl. Every player gets to the Super Bowl. That's an incredible achievement. You know, you start with 32 teams. You got 31 opposition teams, and you try and get there. Massive kudos. You've, it's a lifetime achievement. But I feel like it's even then, when they get to the Super Bowl, it's how crushing you are within reaching distance of the title.
Would you rather get to a Super Bowl and lose, or never get to a Super Bowl?
What would you like? That 10 years from now, when your career's finished, and you think, I was at the Super Bowl, but maybe I just couldn't do enough on that day. Or would you have rather gone out of the championship game and be like, oh, well, at least I don't know how close I could have.
If I'd been there, I would have done it.
I don't know what I would have done. I would have come back in, even with concussion. I would have run back on, and I would have changed the game. I don't know.
I could have gone to Oxford or Cambridge if I wanted to.
Of course. TV's fun. Even tidying up when you're trying to do an essay. I mean, I could have done so much better at university if I didn't decide suddenly I need to do the most boring jobs because they're more important when I had an essay assignment date. Yeah.
I think definitely make it to the Super Bowl and lose, supposed to never have got there. I think so. We're going to fire that one out on social. I'm making a note of it now, and I'm checking it twice. So I'm going to let Alex and the crew know. We're going to push that one out at the NT show. Let us know what you think. Would you rather have made it to a Super Bowl and lost it, or never made it at all? And what if, and kept the imaginary dream alive? Well, within one game of making it, so are, and I want to go next to the absolute belter between the Chiefs and the Texans. I think, and I've seen a few, I think that is the craziest, I mean, definitely the craziest first quarter of football I've ever seen, right? And I think probably all in all, top three crazy games. And top 10 great games, I'd say. Top three crazy games, definitely. And the first quarter, I mean, what on earth do we make of that? And I mentioned Bill O'Brien, Tom, getting the majority of the criticism. And if you're not sure what we're talking about here, where the hell have you been? What have you been doing for the last 24 hours? But the Texans, 24-0 up. And Bill O'Brien, having taken a chip shot field goal as opposed to going for it on fourth down when they were 21 zip up, decides to go for a fake punt in his own territory and blows it, hands the energy and the momentum back to the Kansas City Chiefs, and they never looked back. So Bill O'Brien has suffered so much that people are suggesting that he might get fired as a result. Although I've noticed Deshaun Watson has come out and said, no, stick with him, he's our guy. And I reckon that's going to count for quite a lot. My God, what was Bill O'Brien thinking? And explain it for us, Tom.
I mean, yes. Where do you begin to explain the fourth highest scoring game in postseason history? Where do you begin to explain it? 51 winners, the Chiefs over the Texans, 31. Like you say, Nat, 24 nothing up into the second quarter, and then that preceded the biggest comeback, tied for fourth, actually. Bill O'Brien, on that, you mentioned the fourth and one. It just seemed like he didn't know when to go for a fourth and one and when not to. You mentioned that fake punt. Shouldn't have gone for it on your own 31. Then there was a moment when the Kansas City Chiefs defense was on the absolute ropes and they seemed underprepared. And I think that's why people are questioning Bill O'Brien. When you're in the red zone, you need 1 yard. He apparently didn't have a play that they liked to go for in the red zone, 4-for-1. That says to me, you're underprepared. And even when they asked him, they said, you know, why should you be sticking around as the head coach? Do you think you've done enough? He says they're running in the right direction and we just have to coach better. But I mean, you're that close. They were there for the taking and you've let that slip. Something like 6 unanswered touchdowns by the Chiefs before the Texans were able to do anything. That says to me, a guy that in the big moments in postseason, not able to do it. Now, that's not me saying I think he's a bad head coach. He's managed to get them there. They've had 4 AFC South titles in the 6 years he's been there. But it does make people question, is he the right man to take us to the next level?
It was absolutely right to say it was baffling in the way that he didn't go for it when he could have put the game to bed, almost certainly. If they'd scored then, I think that would have been it, right? And maybe he was second guessing himself. We were talking about this. We were doing that game on air and we were all talking about that. And it was maybe on his mind that he thought, oh, damn, maybe I should have been gutsy. Oh, we'll do it here. And you kind of get it. And then we talked about the pressure getting to players, understandably, the psychologically. And that was clearly something awry with the Chiefs in the first quarter, outside of how well the Texans were playing, how badly the Chiefs are playing. And notably Travis Kelce on their first drive dropping the ball, and there were drops aplenty everywhere, the special teams meltdown twice, like all of these different things were going on. The jitters were clearly apparent on the Chiefs side. Is he going to get why they're in nerves? But I can understand as well, you know, head coach is a human and they were in control. You must be standing there, Tom, when you know in the second quarter and you're 24-0 up, but you're all over them. Everything you're doing offensively is working. They're not putting anything together defensively. You must be the guy. I'm there now. There's no way. There's no way we're messing this up.
Well, this is what I mean. That they were there for the taking. Kansas City Chiefs were on the ropes. My WhatsApp was popping off. I've never seen so much activity. A group of guys that I know that love their NFL. That they're not.
Scott Caporo is in that group.
He was in that group as well. He was like, I've worked with Deshaun Watson. But basically,
I've got to play for Bill O'Brien.
And by the way, if you've never seen Scott Caporo, that is a fantastic impression. But anyway, that's
yours
important.
Or mine.
Both of ours. No, double check the video. but Bill O'Brien, in that moment, they're there for the taking. You have to see them off. And I know it's easy in hindsight and 2020 vision and everything. It's easy to criticize, but I think you're right. Bill O'Brien is only human. He made that mistake the first time around and then thinks, I know what I'll do. We'll go for it. I like the look of this fake punt. I like the look of it at 4-for-1. Yeah. This will work. And it doesn't. And then it begins to unravel and it is a game of confidence. And at that point then, I mean, Travis Kelce, you know, 10 receptions, 134 yards, 3 touchdowns, the first player in history with 3 reception touchdowns in 1 quarter. At that point, there was no stopping them. And that's why the Kansas City Chiefs, that's the Chiefs that we remember and love Andy Reid for, is that high octane explosive offense.
I'll definitely want to get into Andy Reid, but here's the thing, the final word from me anyway on Bill O'Brien. If he'd gone for it on fourth down and failed and then gone for the fake punt, I'd love that. I would have no problem with that at all. And you fell on his sword and crazy wild gambling but it all went wrong. But it's the fact that he didn't go for it on fourth down and play conservative. Okay, fine. Smart play. And then did that. It's like it takes away. I still have respect for him for doing it. At least he had the guts to make the play. And I know Texans fans listening will be probably shouting at whatever device they're listening to this on saying, oh, come on. But I'd rather somebody, did that in a playoff game. Just went for it and gambled. And I think I would. But at the same time, and this has been a narrative, I think, certainly the last 2 years, particularly this year, and when we get onto the Ravens-Titans game, it will come up. unnecessarily going for things, I think, is becoming an issue in the NFL. And, you know, the Ravens too many times, I think, went for it on fourth down and it didn't play out. And they, when they could have got simple points on the board, the best kicker in the game. And I think at the moment, it's an issue that needs to get resolved. I know that there are statistics in the book and everything else. I get that the analytics guys are saying, you know, probability wise, go for it. And then you factor in, we're in the passing era of the NFL, a freewheeling, high scoring era. You know, the opposition are going to be, to the most part, putting up points on you. So I get all of the logic, all makes sense. And like I said, I like a coach that gambles, but maybe not every single time. Andy Reid, right? So Reid was, as I say, getting destroyed by everyone in that first quarter. Where do you stand on this? Because there was real discussion on radio between us all, both on air and off, right? Ollie Thornton was very much in the camp, as I think pretty much everyone except me was in the camp, that Andy Reid was accountable for what happened in the first quarter for the Chiefs. I completely disagree with that. To the most part, there were things like putting Tyreek Hill in for the return which is on Reid for sure, though, you know, you can see the counter argument to that as well. I could get there are certain things that were in his control, but generally speaking, everything was going wrong in the first quarter where his players messing up. How on earth is that on Andy Reid?
It can't be on Andy Reid. It's the same with JJ Watt. There was a few memes and tweets going around about just wait until those wide receivers get back into the locker room and have to face JJ Watt for some of the drops that they had. Andy Reid, you could say it's his fault. He's calling the plays. But let's not forget, Tyreek Hill has been incredible all year. The man is an abundance of talent and speed. Why would you not put him in there to do the return? Andy Reid, obviously, though, and this is, I think, is quite interesting. We're talking about that comeback for the Chiefs, 24-0 down. The second highest comeback was 28 points, and that was Andy Reid losing that game. That was the 2013 AFC wild card against Indianapolis, 45-44. So Andy Reid knows what it feels like to have that situation. And I imagine he was having a moment in his head. He's like, maybe if I can just get it to 30, then I will become the number one comeback. guys. So maybe I like him. You can put a lot on the head coach, but then the players have to execute those plays out there. And you know how talented they are. I think they let him down a bit, but hey, it doesn't matter now. We look at the 51-31 score and know that the Chiefs are rolling.
Yeah, big time. I think the, unsurprisingly, I agree with that. And I think the guys were saying that, well, the players aren't prepared for the game. And clearly it was so uncharacteristic for any professional team, but for a team as good as the Chiefs, it was amongst the worst quarters of football. Which is also amazing, right? So you've had three of the best quarters of football you'll see a team play after pretty much the worst quarter of, you'll see any team play, let alone the Chiefs. That's on the coach. And that's what Ollie and Greg Brady and the guys were saying, is that, it was, you know, on Andy Reid to have his players ready, particularly at the start of the game. And so the reason that these things were happening, were primarily on Reid. The other guy that is breathing a big sigh of relief is Dave Toub, or it could be Dave Taub, I think, and then we've got clarity on this, T-O-U-B anyway, who is the Kansas City special teams coach. he was having quite a bad day at the office until Mahomes and co got him out of jail.
Well, I think what it is once you leave the locker room, it's really difficult to run all the way back. And I think he'd left a fair few of his notes back in the locker room.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. So it's just a little couple of post-it notes that he was writing plays on. And what a turnaround for their special teams towards the end. They were suffocating the Texans, on their returns and everything. So actually, I think you get this quarter out of the way. You can point the finger at whoever it was, but it doesn't matter now. Their next game, which they'll be taking on the Titans, that they can eradicate that and make sure that doesn't happen again. And I mean, they haven't, the Chiefs haven't been in this position, what is it, 50 years or something? A ridiculous stat. So, all the jitters, all those nerves can go out the window now. They've dominated the Texans, played the best three quarters, that they have done maybe all season. Now they're probably the number two favorite, to win the Super Bowl.
I'll give the final word on this game to Deshaun Watson, who spoke with ESPN's Sarah Barshop after the game, and said, there's no doubt, talking about O'Brien. I mean, you might have doubt, said Watson, but there's no doubt. I love that man. I'm going to play hard for that man. You could say whatever you want to say through all the media and all the writing, but as long as I'm the quarterback, he's cool with me. What? What a guy. Just coming out and standing up for his head coach. I love Deshaun Watson.
I love Deshaun Watson. And when I say this, it's not because I'm saying it sarcastically or maliciously, but Deshaun Watson is eligible for a new deal this offseason. So I feel like he's done fantastically well to just say, hey, I support anybody in the building. I am the Texans through and through. I'd like that $140 million for 4 years. Thank you very much.
Side here. Oh, you cynic. He is eligible for a big deal. That is true. As indeed is Patrick Mahomes. So that was a story that broke just before this game, actually, that Ian Rappaport of NFL Network suggesting that Mahomes is going to become the best played player in football. And I think described the deal as mammoth and cited the fact that that is going to create a knock-on effect. So Watson, as you say, they'll wait for Mahomes. Watson's agent will wait for Mahomes to get that deal done and then, then step forward with their suggestion of what Watson should get, but he deserves it. No doubt about that. And there is that they'll be back, the Houston Texans, but it is the Chiefs that roll on, and they roll on and improbably play the Tennessee Titans in the championship game, because Tennessee 10-point underdogs against Baltimore pulled off, you know, one of the upsets, I think, of modern playoff football. There's not overstating it to say that. And it wasn't just the fact that they won the game, Tom, it was how comprehensively they won the game. After it, Marlon Humphrey of the Ravens, hell of a player, said, when he was quite emotional after the loss, said that they choked, that the Ravens choked. And then he stood by that the next day in cold light of day. He was asked again. He said, we choked. That's what happened, which was interesting to hear a player be so forthright and unequivocal. And do you think that is what happened? Do you think that they froze in the glare of the lights? I mean, clearly they didn't play anything remotely resembling how they played for the majority of the season. And Lamar Jackson quite notably turned over the ball a number of times. And although in the end, the numbers and the stats look like he had a strong game, he wasn't as complete as he has been and he could have been after this brilliant season. So do you think that he was representative of a lot of the Ravens here, that they choked, or do you think that the Titans absolutely played a perfect game for them?
I think it's the latter, Nat, and my comedy brain was holding back there when you said that they choked as a team and he was so vocal about it. That didn't add up. choking and being vocal about it.
They gave him a glass of water and he was
then he was okay.
He was fine. Yeah.
And have a little sit down. You'll be all right in a minute. I mean, the Ravens have a game plan, and 14-2 all year, in terms of results, first in the AFC North. They love to get going, get an early lead, and then run the football. And the Titans look prepared for that. The Ravens knew about Derrick Henry. I don't know if you've heard of him. A fantastic player. Even throwing a touchdown in the game. They knew about the dangers of the Titans. And I don't think beforehand, I would have said that they were the number one team to beat. They're just so dominant, and they have been all season. So there must have been something that didn't add up for them. And I don't think it's the fact that they rested. What do they say in the NFL? It's rest or rust. I don't think it was rust that was happening with that team. I think that's a good idea, a statement for them. They choked, and especially they choked when their game plan wasn't there for them. Yeah, Lamar Jackson threw that interception early on, and they had to get back into the game and ask Lamar Jackson to do more than maybe he was able to on the night. So yeah, I kind of agree. I think they did choke, but that's nothing to take away from how well the Titans played.
Yeah, I mean, we knew they were a team with swagger going into the playoffs, and it's obviously partly how they're playing, Tom. You know, with led by Derrick Henry, who is just such literally an explosive figure. He literally explodes. Such a dynamic player.
How are you going to catch air, Nat? If someone's exploded and it's just fragments of air, you can't tackle that.
That's the end of your playoff run. I mean,
how many cleats does he get through?
His feet were exploding through the Ravens defense. The everyone knew that was going to be the plan. You're going to give him the rock and got to try and stop him. And lots of people were citing, well, you know, if the Belichick game plan the week before, which was kind of different from Belichick, normally he will take out the number one weapon and force you to beat him a different way. Henry had a big game against the Patriots, and they still got the game done. But people were saying, well, you look, he had a big game at over, I haven't got it in front of me, but, you know, over 100 yards, a big game against the Patriots in Foxborough, but yet then he put up 14 points. And there was thinking that, well, okay, even if Henry goes off against the Ravens, have they got enough else going on? And they demonstrated they absolutely did. But all of that is still predicated on the idea that Derrick Henry is going to be coming at us. 195 yards, 218 they allowed on the ground, 195 yards to Henry. Just couldn't stop him, even though, you know, he's coming. It'll be interesting to see what happens against the Chiefs, because in the first quarter against the Texans, Houston were running through them as easy as you like. Now, Chris Jones wasn't playing, right, which was a big omission for them, for the Chiefs, of course, and could well be fit for the championship game. And that will make a difference, right? And that was one of the reasons why the Texans were finding it so easy. But that is going to be interesting, isn't it? The Titans up against this Chiefs defense that you can run on, and everyone else seems to try and stop Derrick Henry at the moment and can't. And whether that is going to be enough to get the job done when you know that quite probably Mahomes and co. are going to have, if not an identical day to the one against the Texans, they're going to be putting up quite a lot of points on you.
Indeed. Well, the Chiefs, we know how good they're offenses and defensively, you know, let's not forget they did let 31 points go against Deshaun Watson. Tannehill was a completely different quarterback, and he's asked not to do too much. He didn't even get 100 yards in that game and yet got two touchdowns. One was on that the turnover. Well, basically they had it in the end zone of the Ravens because of that turnover, or they went for it on 4th and 1, I believe. Calling back to your 4th and 1 attempts. That was in the second quarter, actually. And it ends with a fantastic touchdown. So the thing is with Derrick Henry, and some people will say, you don't have to worry about him too much because he has run for 195 yards in that game, previously 182. The one before that was 211. His legs will be tired. You do not have to worry about Derrick Henry. What you do have to worry about is the fact that Tannehill likes to run with the football as well.
Yeah.
And the fact that Derrick Henry became the first running back since 1987 in the postseason to throw a touchdown. What the Titans do is they seem to just be able to do the thing you don't expect them to do. You expect Derrick Henry to run the football. No one can stop him. And then they do the other things, which means that you're back in the game. You're thinking, hang on, we don't know what they're going to do this at any moment. And that's the secret weapon, is you don't know how good this Titans team is. And I think that's what the Chiefs are going to have to do, is be prepared that Tannehill might light it up at any point. He can do. Maybe he could do that in the game. But also, I don't know, you just have to stack the box and hope Derrick Henry doesn't have an absolute cannon on him.
But the Henry stiff arm on Earl Thomas was a beauty, wasn't it? And particularly because Earl Thomas had, before the game, suggested that, I think he was alluding to the Patriots the week before and saying, yeah, they're really tackling. They don't really know how to, it's going to be very different against us. And Henry, apparently, after he stiff-armed it, and you haven't, if you didn't watch all of the game, haven't seen, will probably be in the highlights, I think, but Henry stiff-armed Earl Thomas. And then, as someone pointed out, basically used him as a blocker for about 10 yards, just ran up the field with him. And afterwards, apparently, they asked him, one of the press asked him afterwards, Henry, and he said, what did he say to Earl Thomas after that? And apparently, Derrick Henry said, good to see you, man. Hopefully we can do this again.
That's glorious.
He did or not, but he said that in the press, so I thought that was genius.
I'd love it if the fact that the Titans could just sign Earl Thomas to be just on Derrick Henry's back so he can run along with him, barging through Chiefs players. He's just, you know, incredible. And the Titans are the team that I don't think many people expected them to be in this position. Mike Vrabel's done a monumental job to turn their fortunes around. Let's not forget Mariota was the number one quarterback to start the season. Tannehill was doing exactly the job he's supposed to, and they know that they've got a running back who over the regular season got 1,540 yards. I mean, they run the football, they have some fantastic pass rushes as well. It is going to be a very, very juicy game, but part of me is a little bit disappointed for Lamar Jackson, because you look at the numbers he put up in that game. Those are sort of numbers, apart from the two interceptions, but those are numbers that would suggest that you should be winning the game. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent, but just couldn't do any more than they could, especially when Ingram went out of the game injured.
Well, and also on that note, individual game, and Ingram's a great shot. That's a really good point. That I think that was a big factor in why they didn't get the offense going in the normal way. It's a really, really good point. The final line on this one, I think, should go to Jackson, because the Ravens and Adam Schefter was reporting this as well overnight, that they're going to keep pretty much all of this team together over the course of the offseason. So they're going to be back there or thereabouts again. And it's a young team that has played brilliantly for the season, and none more so than Lamar Jackson, becoming the first player to throw for 3,000 yards and rush for 1,000 yards in the same season. Yeah. All of those idiots who say, oh, I'm still not sure whether he can throw. He led the NFL with 36 touchdown passes. All right, so yeah. Can we put that to bed right now? Great point Greg Brady made, Tom, on the broadcast last night. The big concern, obviously, is Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. And I don't mean let's not get carried away, or let's get carried away because he's lost two back-to-back playoff games in the manner that he has. And, oh, I don't know if he can do it. But I do think that's the kind of thing that's going to start playing on a young quarterback's mind. As Greg said, if he loses another one and out next year, then it starts to become a thing and everybody bloody talks about it. And then it could be self-perpetuating.
But yes, and Greg, I wouldn't begin to suggest that Greg's wrong in any way, Mr. Brady. But I will say this is those stats and records are there to be broken. And the fact that I think for me personally, the Ravens had kind of switched off from week 16. And they had a long wait to really get ready for this one. And I think part of it was a little bit complacent from them. However, I think the Titans were rolling. The first sixth seed, the first time since 2010 that they've gone on to win this game. And the last time a team did that was the Green Bay Packers, who won four games to end up winning the Super Bowl. So don't write the Titans off. I think they were rolling, unlike the Ravens, and that isn't going to affect Lamar Jackson. He'll come back stronger next year.
We are going to preview the championship games, of course, on our Friday episode. And I'm sure I and Michael have one or two things to say about them as well. That drops on Wednesday. The deep dive with I and Mike. Neil Reynolds in the house on Friday, previewing the big game. So looking forward to that. But let's wrap up looking back with you, Tom Deakin, and the final game of the weekend. And it was a goodie as well. I mean, a very different kind of game. We kind of had it already. Had the one-sided dominant performance from your 49ers. You had the upset special with the Titans, the craziest game of all time with the Chiefs and the Texans. And then you had a real chess match with the Packers and the Seahawks that, once again, Russell Wilson manages to do this every single time he shoots up, keeping the Seahawks in a game that they shouldn't really be in. And the Packers look like they should be running away with that on a number of different occasions and phases in the game, but the Seahawks kept clawing their way back in. But in the end, they fell short. What do you make of the Green Bay Packers' performance? Was it to you, because the way I looked at it, and if you agree with this or not, pretty representative of their season as a whole? You know, where, yeah, obviously impressive. They've beaten the Seahawks during the championship game, but it just doesn't quite add up. It just doesn't quite join up. I'm not looking at this team and thinking this is a great team. You look at the 49ers, you think this is a really, really strong team. The Ravens, even in defeat, the Titans in their own way, the Chiefs, certainly what we saw last night, the Packers just don't feel to be a cohesive unit. And hey, look, teams with less cohesion have gone on to win the Super Bowl, right? But at the moment, they're not convincing me.
Yeah, it feels like, and I'm going to say lots of positive things about the Green Bay Packers before anyone gets on my back about the fact that I'm a Niners fan. But and I've said it several times on this show that it's not Matt LaFleur, it's Matt LaMier, and that's kind of how those Green Bay Packers have been this year. And maybe, and I did actually say on this show that the team that I most worry about the Niners playing in the NFC Championship is the Green Bay Packers, because they always. they're just that team that feels like they've got another gear and they've held back on something and right. never write off Aaron Rodgers. And they have had that season. I'm looking back at some of the losses. The last one they had was, oh, that's funny, against the Niners, quite a way back. It wasn't. They've lost before there, but at 37-8, they lost. And actually, quite frankly, they just have looked like they've just done enough. I wonder if they have that other gear, and if they had the other gear and we'd seen it this season, we'd be saying, hey, wow, those Packers are looking tasty. And yet I don't think they've quite hit that thing. And now that they've lost another wide receiver, it's going to be a tough game. But how good does Devontae Adams look? I mean,
I loved what Rogers said. Speaking of you, echoing you earlier on, we said we'd done him. Roger said, he was on one tonight. He was on one tonight, Devontae. He said he was on one tonight. I love that. He was absolutely brilliant though, Adams. And as Ollie, our producer, suggested, a major stud in the playoffs, says Ollie. I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, we know how good the Green Bay Packers, they're always that team that do well. It's whether they have the extra factor and they did enough. Let's not look at this game that they completely owned the Seahawks. They very much got a good enough lead and held on, in my opinion. That's how I saw the game. But let's not write off the fact that Aaron Jones has got over 20 rushing touchdowns, I think, in this season. They've changed the offense a little bit to try and take the pressure off Aaron Rodgers, but they're getting it done, and Aaron Rodgers is taking on the Niners, and there's that storyline that's always been there. And when he was asked, you know, did the Niners make a mistake, or were you disappointed they didn't draft you? He famously said, not as disappointed as the 49ers will be, they didn't draft me. Ooh. So it's written there. It's a fantastic storyline, and Aaron Rodgers is, if not the best, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
That is, as Raposco, far more cerebral than "you like that." Although I do like "you like that," as does Richard Sherman as well. And that's going to be, as we established earlier, and that's going to be an interesting battle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You would assume it will be Sherman against Adams. And to your point, Lazar going out, that makes that a little bit more complicated for the Packers. But you got Rodgers, you got Adams, Jones, as a offensive trifecta, that is as dangerous as they come. And if those three are on song, it's going to be a really, really interesting matchup against this 49ers D.
And especially the fact that the Vikings, you know, the Niners held Dalvin Cook to terrible yardage. And the last time they played, Jamal Williams was the leading running back in that game. But, you know, we know how good Aaron Jones is to potentially get that running game going, which would free up Aaron Rodgers to make those sort of plays to Devontae Adams. But Sherman versus Adams, I mean, that's a sort of wide receiver cornerback battle we absolutely love to see. And I wouldn't be surprised if Sherman adds another interception to his hefty pile of them.
I cannot wait for it. The double bill of championship games, of course, on Sunday, this coming Sunday. AFC first and NFC. Is that right? I think that's right. Yeah, that's the right order for them. And we will know this time next week who is going to be slugging it out in Miami, Super Bowl 54. We're going to be there, of course. Deeks, we're heading out to Miami.
To see the Niners as well.
No,
do you mean?
Sorry, man. I mean the. Sorry, that's all.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The show's going out. Yeah, there's not enough.
No, that's fine.
On the hey, I don't make the rules. I don't make the rules. I'll make some phone calls now. Can you hear me typing? I'm emailing ESPN top brass.
It's fine. It's fine. I'll be watching it in some weird location, probably another comedy gig, green room. So don't you worry.
As long as Scott Kapura is there with more stories of which other players that he met in the past that doesn't actually know who they are, that would be great. I cannot wait for that. And wishing you well, Deeks. I'm sure we'll check in with you before we head off on the plane to Miami. Of course, you've been a big part of our coverage this season, our show this season, and we really, really appreciate that. And I'm glad your 49ers are still standing at this stage of proceedings.
Yeah, me too, Nat. And you know what? It's so lovely to see that potentially it won't be a 49ers Ravens repeat, which I was dreading the Super Bowl. So, do you know what? And the best thing is, the halftime entertainment's going to be unreal this year. Shakira and J-Lo. Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Hey, you know, before we let you go, one thing, I can't believe we haven't talked about it yet. The new Dallas Cowboys head coach.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's not the clapper. What, you know, he's gone, Jason Garrett. So now you've got a new head coach, someone that will take orders from Jerry Jones. Did I just say that with
surprised they've gone to, you know, somebody who's primary experience has been in the Premier League, in the Championship, and international football, as opposed to the NFL.
Good old Mick McCarthy. Yeah, well, obviously, he's got a great track record at the Republic of Ireland, and he's going to be telling Jerry Jones what for. That will be happening, and I cannot wait to see it.
The idea of Mick McCarthy and Jerry Jones talking football.
It's too hot up here. It's too hot in Dallas. It's too hot.
Can I just check, Coach McCarthy, why have we got six tight ends on the field?
Yeah, well, because they're bigger than the running backs, and we need them. That's what we need. And they can block as well and catch, if I say so.
I promise you, in the offseason, we're going to devote a whole episode to that. We're going to role play a whole episode of Mick McCarthy in the NFL. Great stuff, Deeks. We'll check in with you soon, bud.
Absolute pleasure, and take care, everyone.
Lovely stuff from Deeks. As I say, we're going to be previewing the Championship games this weekend. Cannot wait for that. That's the Friday show. But we're going to turn our attention now to college football and a college championship preview from none other than Mr. Ben Isaacs.
The college football playoff final is at 1 a.m. tonight, and it should be the best game of the season. You've got the two best quarterbacks in the nation in Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. That might be this year's first overall draft pick and next year's with Trevor Lawrence. If you look at the quarterbacks, Lawrence is the better runner. He hasn't had to show it in the regular season, but he was key. It was key to beating Ohio State in a classic semifinal a couple of weeks ago. Joe Burrow, of course, won the Heisman. LSU have games where they do plan to run Burrow, and it seems that when he does run, it seems that it's planned out from the beginning that this is going to be one of those games. And how Clemson defend Burrow will probably decide the game, because no one has really defended him all season. His numbers have been incredible. He's great at getting the ball out quickly when teams send pressure. But on the flip side, if you go back and watch any game where a defense just packs the secondary against him, he ends up with so much time, he'll find a target anyway. He may end this game having had the most accurate season in college football history. He's on pace for it. Under pressure, he's thrown 19 touchdowns this year. So just think about that. Even when people are in his face, he's thrown 19 touchdowns. His completion percentage is nearly 74%, so you can draw your own conclusions on his accuracy. And I don't think that's that percent. You shouldn't think that stat percentage is padded by lots of short passes that are almost like handoffs. He's incredibly accurate on intermediate and long passes too. You're going to see him go deep a lot, and you'll see him complete deep a lot. Now, Clemson's front four this season isn't what it was last year, thanks to players entering the NFL. But the linebackers and DBs are an area of strength though. So they should lean on that and try to get everyone well covered, because I think that's going to provide more success for Clemson than just trying to rush Burrow, because that just doesn't seem to work. I think the Clemson defense just has to slow the game down. They can't expect to shut down Burrow and this offense, but they can limit possessions. If they can play great red zone defense like they did against Ohio State and put together time-consuming drives of their own, then they will have the advantage. The hardest game LSU had all year was against Auburn back in October. And that was how Auburn kept it close. LSU won that one 23-20 though. So even when you do control the clock and you do have good red zone defense, it doesn't mean you're going to beat them. LSU's defense will likely play deep against Justin Ross and T. Higgins. Those are Clemson's most dangerous receivers. But if they do that, then they will leave themselves open to running back Travis Etienne making big plays and again eating up the clock. Now, Travis Etienne has had a fantastic season for Clemson, and he was not so much of a factor towards the end of the season, but he'll probably end the game as Clemson's all-time leading rusher. He's probably going to go in the second round if you're thinking about the draft. I think he is the key player for Clemson. If he has a good game, then it means Trevor Lawrence isn't having to do absolutely everything, and it will mean that they are keeping the LSU offense off the field. Clemson's got the best offensive line out of these two teams, but both are elite level. Just something about the coaches. Dabo Sweeney used to get upset when people used the phrase Clemsoning. Now, if you're quite new to college football and you've only followed it in the last few years, then you won't know that that actually meant to underachieve and mess things up when in a good position, because now he's got Clemson on the verge of being a true dynasty. opposite him is Ed Orgeron. He recruited The Rock when he was a defensive line coach at the University of Miami, believe it or not. He ended up becoming head coach at Ole Miss, and he didn't win more than four games in a season. It wasn't a success. He was briefly the top man at USC, but the job he always wanted was LSU. He is the most LSU person you can imagine. If you hear him speak, that's how you imagine a crazy football coach from Louisiana to talk. And that's how he talks. And I think that has kind of counted against him in the eyes of people. They thought that he couldn't be as shrewd and as smart as some of the other coaches, like Nick Saban. People thought he wasn't up to it because of the Ole Miss record. So this is real vindication for him, even if they don't beat Clemson. And they're favorites to do that. Even if they don't beat Clemson, he's proven he can be a top-level coach. I think the game should be fantastic. I think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be a super high-scoring game, but it is obviously a must-watch. And one of the things I like about the college championship game is the ESPN megacast. And if you don't know what that is, it's when ESPN offer loads and loads of different camera angles that you can choose. So you can see the All 22, which is the camera angle that coaches use when they're seeing what did and didn't work after a game. Pylon cameras. They can have all this VR stuff going on. But one of my favorite things as well is all the little things that they do where you can have, they've got a ref cast. So you can see what the referees are saying through the entire game. My favorite is the coach's film room. Now, if you love the X's and O's of the game, watch the megacast, go on the coach's film room option, and instead of just getting the normal commentary, you're going to get top-level college coaches dissecting the game, every single play, and you'll see they're trying to outdo each other, predict what's going to come next. So some of these guys are kind of legit geniuses, so that's pretty fascinating. So join me. Stay up till 1 a.m., be an absolute disaster in your job on Tuesday morning, but you just watch the game.
Like the way that has dropped in. Drop in the wisdom and the smarts, like a little capsule into the pod. Great stuff from Ben. He'll be back to talk about it all on Wednesday and see how it played out. ESPN Player is where you watch that tonight, so get involved with that if you haven't already, and enjoy. We're back Wednesday with Iron Mike for the Deep Dive. See you then. Bye for now.